Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Driving Mall Show here on New Zealand Sports Radio. It is Monday, the 20th of July, and we have had all sorts of action over the weekend. Obviously, Super Rugby Aotearoa Round 6 took place, and Super Rugby AU, or Super Rugby Gold, as we like to call it here on New Zealand Sports Radio, Round 3 took place. But you know what? We discussed that for well over an hour last night. So if you want to catch up on the field action from Super Rugby, then go and listen back to that recorded show. You can see that on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, if you want to watch it. Or if you want to listen, you can listen to it on our podcast. Just search for New Zealand Sports Radio on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Acast. Because tonight, what we are going to be talking about is mainly stuff off the pitch. Super Rugby, where's it going? Because both New Zealand and Australia have put their oar in as to what they want to see the future of the competition looking like. We've also had the Farah-Palmer Cup draw announced as well. So there's that to discuss. We will talk about some on-pitch action because we'll be talking about club rugby here in New Zealand. The Shoot Shield did kick off last weekend, but I'm afraid, folks, look, I'll be honest, I'm not fully up to speed on that. However, Hugh will be giving us his Shoot Shield predictions, so do check that out on drivingmall.com. Good evening, Stephen Harris. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, good evening, Paul, and once again, a privilege and a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you very much. So, look, something I mentioned on the morning sports briefing a couple of days ago, but we should say it here as well. Look, a big thank you to all of the Goodyear Auckland Club rugby sides who have welcomed Stephen and myself along to their games over the last, it's been 5 weeks now we've been going to them, Stephen, or you have. I've been going to a couple and welcoming us along, giving us post-match interviews, giving us access to the players and the coaches. And just a few stats for you. So over the last 5 weeks, we have done, we've done 16 interviews, I think it is, but 18 videos if we include the try you got last weekend, and also the player welcome that I did the weekend before. Over those 18 videos, we've had 166 hours of watch time, folks. These little two-minute videos are being watched about 9 or 10 hours each, which is amazing. Over 17,000 views on Facebook. So thank you very much, everyone who has viewed. Do like the pages, do share those videos, and do share New Zealand Sports Radio. We are trying to get out to grassroots, not just to cover the big, rich people. Actually, an interesting question from Simon to kick us off. Who legally owns the name Super Rugby? You got any idea on that one, Steve?
No idea, but I suppose you'd have to ask somebody from Senza. But I suppose it's remained at Super Rugby, but in all sorts of forms. It goes back from Super 12 almost through to Super 18, back to where it is at this time. And I've got to say, we are seeing some Super Rugby at the minute.
We are seeing some Super Rugby. Simon, I would guess that Sanzar owns the copyright on that term and the competition. But at the end of the day, Sanzar isn't really an entity. Well, I guess technically it's an entity, but in reality, it's not an entity. It's four countries that have votes and say what happens. It doesn't decide anything. Everything's decided by New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, and Argentina, with Argentina obviously having the smallest say. So it's those big three, really. So whilst it legally will be owned by Sanzar, those four countries can pretty much use it as they want to. But it will be Sanzar that would own the actual rights. And let's kick off with that on the Super Rugby side of things. So, Stephen, New Zealand Rugby came out with their with their view of how Super Rugby should be in the future, looking at a time zone specific tournament, saying that they should keep they want to keep all five teams. They would like to include a Pacific team and then have a maximum of 8 to 10 teams, so basically 2 to 4 teams from Australia. Now that committee that was looking into it basically involved had a representative from the Sky, I think it was, the five Super Rugby franchises, one from the provinces, I think, and obviously New Zealand Rugby had a say in that as well. So what do you think, first off, about the way that New Zealand Rugby went about deciding or looking at what the future tournament should be?
I think, Paul, they're just reacting to what's happening at the minute in and around COVID. Obviously, the likes of South Africa, not a lot going down at the minute. And I think they've also looked at this smaller tournament and thought to themselves, wow, this is really working with this five New Zealand teams. But obviously, I don't really know if it's sustainable. So what they are looking for is some partners who can actually add value to the competition, and hence I think they're just looking around at the place, looking around at some Pacific Island options, looking across at Australia. I think if they were to look at Australia, I think there won't be the same number of teams for Australia. I think they might only look at maybe three sides out of Australia, but I suppose the one little thing that you have Australia has got is Twiggy Forrest with Western Force, who's got a lot of money, because that's going to be the key thing at the end of the day, Paul, to make it actually sustainable.
Yeah, it is. Now, to my mind, look, there was an element of they started off the review this year, and then obviously, and then it's kind of expanded because of the whole COVID situation. Now, a couple of points here, folks. New Zealand Rugby signed up a new deal for the next however many years it is. I don't think it was the full 12 years, but it's like a 5-year deal with Sky last year. 1 year into and that was supposed to kick off next year. You kind of just before you're about to start off your new deal that you've already signed, you then go and do a review. That to me seemed very strange to me. If you're going to do a review, do it before you sell the product, not afterwards. So to me, the timing was very reactionary and wrong by New Zealand Rugby. Secondly, I think the way that they haven't included the people that they're inviting in the decision-making process is also a bad way of doing it. Hey, you know what? We'd like a Pacific team. Did you ask the Pacific if they'd like a team? Now, clearly we know they do, or how they would like a team. No, you didn't. You just decided, hey, we think we want one, and we'll go and search out for one. Did you talk to Australia about the structure and how many teams they would like? No, you didn't. You thought you'd go public and then talk to Australia afterwards. Folks, yeah, not the best way to go about it, in my view, here, to be honest. Australia have come back and said, hey, look, we want five teams. Unsurprisingly, is that a good idea? We'll get onto that in a second. But clearly, yeah, they haven't involved the people, their partners, who they want to be so-called partnering with, And that's not really a good way to start to start and build up trust, is it, Steve?
No, not at all. And listen, you're not the first Englishman that's had a crack at them as well, because English writer Chris Foy from the Daily Mail has also had a crack as well, and he's perceived the New Zealand Rugby Union have got a superiority complex towards the trans-Tasman neighbours. Now, however we view Australian rugby, we want Australian rugby to be strong. I mean, you said they've got some great young players running around. And listen, I saw a bit of an improvement with their two Super Rugby games over the weekend. And we have got to make them inclusive, and by that, it will create a bit of interest across the Tasman as well. But yeah, transparency definitely. The big thing here that's in play, Paul.
Sorry, what was that English thing you were talking about, Stephen?
I was just... Yeah, good on you.
It just happened to be wearing my England jersey. And
okay, there's all the viewers. They've gone. They're going to watch whatever's on television on a Monday night.
So yes, now let's take a look at the Australian side of things. Australia wanting five teams, I think, to be honest with you, is too many at the end of the day. But to suggest that they're going to get anything less than four really shows a total lack of understanding of the. Oh, dearie me, I've got to pull this comment up. Ashwin goes, of course we have a superiority complex because we are better. Well, okay. Yes.
Oh, boy.
And in some ways it's hard to argue with the bin fire that Australian administration has been recently. I think five teams is too many for the players they have. But I think anyone who thinks they're going to go below four teams really doesn't understand the sporting landscape in Australia from a rugby union point of view. You've already mentioned Twiggy Forrester, who is the main money in Australia. And you can tell that because if you look at the committee that's been put together to look at an Australian Rugby World Cup, there are two people on there who basically aren't rugby people. One is from Twiggy Forrester's mining company. And the other one is from Qantas, because Qantas is the biggest sponsor. So the two people you have to keep happy from a financial point of view in Australia are Twiggy Forrester and Qantas, to a lesser degree, Fox, who are the media rights owner. But those two, you definitely have to. So if you're going to keep Twiggy happy, you're going to include Western Force. If we look at the other teams then, you have to have a team in Sydney. I mean, it's where that's the home of the rugby union in Australia, and you have to have the Queens and Reds because, again, Brisbane is the second base where the people are. And then the most successful Super Rugby franchise in Australia has been the Brumbies, and therefore you've got to include the Brumbies as well. You can't cut any of those three. So, look, Australia's got to have at least four on that. Anyway, so that's to me, anyone who thinks that anything less than four really doesn't understand things. Aaron, does Qantas have any money? Good question. Maybe they don't, but maybe they're lacking a bit at the moment with obviously the lack of flights going on around the world. But they have been the traditional backers, or they have been the main sponsor of Australian rugby for many years now. And hence they have a big that's why they're included in the in that Rugby World Cup thing. So I think that's a lack of understanding. Now, Super Rugby Australia has obviously said they want to have five teams. I think that will be negotiable. And I think it should come down to four. And the Melbourne Rebels need to be cut, essentially. Sorry, everyone who's in Melbourne there.
Yeah, Paul, I'll just further add to that. We know that the Melbourne Storm have been playing out of that city for a very, very long time and a very successful side out there. But even as successful as the Melbourne Storm have been, they have actually struggled to get a foothold there. That is AFL territory, no question. So if you've got visions of trying to develop the game in Melbourne, it just simply ain't going to happen. Where if you look across to Perth, you know, New Zealand and South African community over there. It was, you know, that's why they were so devastated over there. You were in a legitimate area where it could take off. And more importantly, the transparency between Australia and the Pacific Islands is very, very important. You've got to make them feel inclusive. But more importantly, how you structure that particular competition. I'd love to see a lot of movement around the franchises. How fantastic would it be if we had some New Zealand or Pacific Island players playing for the Western Force? I know I'll be up to watch that game. I just think New Zealand rugby has to be a little bit more open-minded, and I'm frankly quite disappointed with the original comments that came from Steve Hansen a couple of weeks ago, and of course Gregor Paul with his article. Rugby Australia has been branded unsustainably deluded. You know, seriously? Seriously?
So was he talking about Australian rugby or New Zealand rugby there?
But no, he's talking about Australian rugby, but it's just so disrespectful. You know, if you want a sustainable competition, you want everybody on board and you need everybody strong. I just don't get it. Yeah, we're having a whale of a time watching the Super Rugby Aotearoa and some absolutely fun, fantastic games, but it seems like a little bit of a pastime poking fun at how the Australian games are going. You know, you want those games to be better, and on the weekend they were better. They will get better in time, but I do believe they need a bit of a leg up. It's a little bit like the Bledisloe Cup all over again, where you have three games where I believe it should be just played on one game only per year.
So let's see which way round which order to take things in. Let's talk about let's go on to that point you make there about how everyone is so happy about Super Rugby at the moment in New Zealand. Now, some attendance figures for you. The Chiefs opening game against the Blues in wet conditions in round two got 23,000 people. Against the Hurricanes in round four, that dropped down to 15,000 people. This last weekend against the Highlanders, that's now down to 10,000, right? So we've already seen a drop of half of that. Now, I know Arshin thinks that the 23,000 was because of the Blues. Maybe it was, but it's still 15,000 down to 10,000 in two weekends from the Hurricanes to the Highlanders. I'm trying to remember if that Chiefs Hurricanes game was wet or not, but the Chiefs Highlanders one definitely wasn't. And they're both Sunday afternoon games. To see a drop of 5,000 people off from that. Look, the initial crowds we got were there because, to a certain degree at least, because we'd basically been locked up. And we can see that because also the Hurricanes versus Crusaders, that was 20,000 in week two as well. Come to week five, Hurricanes versus Highlanders, it's down to 16,000. Now, back up to 20,000 against the Blues, but still, some of the crowds are dropping off. The interest will drop off as well. So it's not. We need to wait till we get to the end of the competition, maybe in the beginning of next year, to understand what the real long-term level of interest is, if they don't change anything.
Yeah. Well, listen, Paul. I think the other thing we've got to take into account. You did right. It was like an occasion those first few rounds. Everybody wanted to be there. But to be fair, the rugby has been backed up, and I'd like to see the Sky figures. I believe the Sky figures have been very solid, so that will give you a fair indication of where they sit at the moment. With regards to the Chiefs, I think it's just probably a case of the Chiefs just not performing, and I sense a little bit of frustration. Although I do question why the Chiefs haven't taken a game either to Rotorua or to counties. It's a very, very short window, and I think there was the opportunity to maybe take the Chiefs over to those other venues.
Counties Stadium is not up to standard anymore. It really needs a big refit. But anyway, that's a different
For daytime. I think for daytime games, I think it would be okay. You'd get a good. That's a big rugby community in a small union down there. They'd turn up, and you'd grab probably a few people from Auckland, not too far to travel, if you know what I mean. But definitely for night games, it's a bit of a concern down there. The lighting probably not as good as it could be. So I'm just wondering why they're not thinking outside the square.
Yeah, Rotorua, though, I do agree. That's a bigger stadium. Look, they host Maori All Blacks games there. We've had the Lions go there. That stadium is big enough, even if it needs modernising as well. I mean, talking of the of County's Manukau Stadium, I'm not sure if they've yet fixed the hole in the media room's roof from when the sky technician put his foot through the roof during a game when I was there last year at Meister 10 Cup. So it's not big enough anymore. The changing rooms and things aren't really up to scratch, to be honest. But anyway, so that's a separate rabbit hole. There's been a lot of talk out of Australia, and Simon mentioned this point about them going alone and saying, actually, you know what? If New Zealand won't give us what we want, sod them. We'll just do our own thing over here in Australia, which is an interesting one. And they've said that they would like to have a Pacific team within their competition as well. So all of a sudden, gone.
And Paul, that could be an interesting one, because we know how the player movement works. Not everybody, we all know there's a really good talent pool in New Zealand. And if you've got a professional competition just heading across the ditch, how much is that depth that's just under the Super Rugby players, you know, guys who are on wider contracts? Why wouldn't you just hop across the ditch and play for an Australian franchise?
Yeah, absolutely. There is definitely that's definitely an option as well. Very quickly, Aaron says, "What about Tauranga? Look, Tauranga is a totally makeshift stadium. that's not a proper stadium at all. So no, that's not up to Super Rugby standards.
We're never going to get invited to Pukekohe, Tauranga ever again. I might. Paul won't be.
I love Tauranga to go there. Brilliant for a ISM Cup game, right? But it's got one permanent stand. The rest of it's scaffolding. The corporate boxes are tents down one end of the pitch." There's no Wi-Fi. There's no power for the media. The media so-called box is a table that's stuck over the chairs in front. It doesn't have the facilities to do this at all. Now, middle-aged, white, opinionated administrators is where I'm going here with this one, because New Zealand Rugby goes, yes, we want a Pacific team, please. And you know what? We will deal with some people in Hawaii and we'll have the team in South Auckland. Okay. Australia go, no. That is not what you should do for a Pacific team. What you should do is have the Pacific team in Sydney. Now, is it me or is it a bunch of white colonial guys telling the islands again what they should have and what they need, rather than actually asking them? To me, this is the amount of entitlement from both sides around what the Pacific Islands should do, to me, is just nuts on this one. If you're going to have a Pacific team, look, they talk about commercial reality. At the moment, the Blues can't fill a stadium when they're the only super team trying to get a crowd in Auckland. If you add competition to that, they're going to get even less people turning up. If you do the same thing in Sydney, the Waratahs, again, they can't fill a stadium. So look, putting a Pacific team in either Sydney or Auckland, to me, is totally a bad idea.
Yeah, Paul, the only thing I can really think of, these respective rugby unions, Australia, New Zealand, just don't trust the governance in the islands. We all know it's the governance in those particular countries is very dodgy. Whether that comes back to it, I don't really know. But boy, you know, sometimes you've got to, somebody who is struggling, you've got to give them a little bit of a hand up.
Sure. Now, look, I mean, Arsenal makes the exact same point about the administration over there. You can put various clauses and things in there saying, hey, look, you need oversight from these sort of people to help you run it, or your accounts must be managed by X accountancy company to make sure you don't just siphon off all the money. You can do that. That's and put some structures in like that. Say, look, hey, look, some controls in. But saying before, saying outright, hey, the team should be here, I think that's wrong. I think the team should be actually in the islands, having it based in either Auckland or Sydney. If you're going to base it in Australia, base it somewhere where there isn't a team already. And like they talk about things like the Gold Coast or something like that. In New Zealand, basically, we've run out of places to put teams, to be honest. It's entirely wrong.
Is it the old sort of Labour Party avenue where they're basically just sort of throwing out ideas or throwing out the bait just to see what happens? And once they get all the basically the feedback, whether people are annoyed about it or people like the ideas, then they bypass that and look somewhere else. Has it got that feel to it?
Well, it's got more the feel of if we're going to go into politics, of a national party. All white front bench telling the Pacific people how they should behave and live. But anyway,
not enough reading that white shirt you're wearing, Paul.
it smacks of people who think they know better than other people. Look, maybe they do, but if you ever expect the islands to improve, then look, you've got to work with them, and even if you do know better, you've got to make it look like it's their idea to impose a professional team on them. It's just the wrong way about going about it to me.
I really do hope they find some sort of solution where all the parties are on the same song sheet, because I think it would be incredibly sad if Australia
We don't mean political parties here.
We mean rugby parties. I'd be incredibly sad if Australia do go on their own, because it means any idea of maybe having a Pacific Island team probably goes out the window as well.
Yeah. The Hawaiian thing might be confusing some people. I get why they're looking at dealing with the Hawaiian organization, because look, they appear to be a crowd that look to be. They're in the process of putting together a Major League Rugby side. Now that would be a separate side to the Super Rugby one. It wouldn't be mixed over. Look, you're looking at a group there that's got the mana of people like Kano, et cetera, involved, but it's also got the business acumen of some business people and looks to be moving in the right way. So I understand why they're dealing with what looks like a proper organization in inverted commas, rather than, as we say, some of the issues that we've had in the Pacific Islands. But we've spent nearly half the show talking about that.
Paul, not a bad thing. I would hope that there is a little bit of diversity within the Rugby Football Union. Of course, former All Black Ronnie Clark was appointed to a NZRU Pacifica role back in April. I'm not given some of the redundancies or cuts that they had within the rugby union. I'm not too sure if he's actually still in that role, but I'd be sort of curious to know if he's having, you know, any sort of input or say, depending on what his role is within that particular role with the New Zealand Rugby Football Union.
Let's be blunt here. New Zealand Rugby is making advances in their diversity. Look, they've got more females on the board than they ever had before, and they are increasing the Pacifica ratio as well. But there's, yeah, that's one. So there is still some way to go on that. So just to clarify around the Hawaiian thing, is that they're going through the process of setting up a Major League Rugby team. Major League Rugby have formally recognized them and said they've got a set, pardon me, I think it was in 90 days to answer a bunch of questions to get the votes and to be allowed into to Major League Rugby. I mean, some of those, Hawaii currently has no professional sports teams in it at all. And part of the issues there obviously are around travel and the cost of that. So one of the things that that franchise is covering off on is by partnering with Hawaiian Airways, I think it is, and also a hotel group to basically say, look, they will cover the costs of all teams, all the other teams when they travel to Hawaii. So there are things like that going on at the moment that they're having to put it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to show that you've actually got all the contracts, everything in place. And that's what they're doing currently, is getting all of that in place so they can formally get signed off and accepted by Major League Rugby. It's definitely not a fait accompli. It may not happen. It's not definitely going to happen. Some interesting, they've got Mick the Kick is as their head coach, the ex-All Blacks skills coach. So Mick, I want to say Mick O'Brien, but it's not, is it? It's Mick, I've gone blank. Sorry, folks.
Eddie O'Brien.
No. The ex All Blacks skills coach was.
McBurn.
McBurn, thank you. So he's going to be the head coach of the Hawaiian Major League Rugby team if they get accepted. So it's going to be interesting to see that. I guess before we come on all of this, Simon Hughes goes, I think we need to incorporate the top league. Yes, I've seen some talk out of Japan through from Rich Freeman that, yes, they're talking about a top league come Super Rugby sort of crossover or some sort of tournament or involvement. I do think that Australia, New Zealand, the Pacific Islands, and also Japan should be getting themselves together around that, potentially with, in the future, looking at South Korea, Hong Kong, etc. As well, and their involvement. I do think that should be there. You are listening to New Zealand Sports Radio, folks. Don't forget, we come to you at 8 p.m. every Monday with the Driving Maul Show. You can also listen to us on the go. So just check out the podcast, Driving Maul. New Zealand Sports Radio on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Acast, all of those wonderful places. Really would appreciate you subscribing to the podcast and also sharing this with your friends and telling your friends about the channel and the shows. So other topics, let's kick off on some club rugby. Stephen, where do you want to start with that?
Yeah, let's do that. Of course, we won't be starting with Northland this week because of the inclement weather that they received in the far north. And listen, all our thoughts go out to everybody in the wider community of Northland. They were hit very hard by a substantial amount of rain and probably some of the biggest floods around. I mean, as I heard somebody quote today, that it was an every 500-year event. I'm surprised they were actually taking that sort of data 500 years ago, Paul. So you wonder where they get that sort of data. But, really feel for everybody in the Northern community. And I know there are a couple of clubs that are pretty much underwater. The Ngāti Hene Moirua United Kawakawa Club, practically underwater, some of the images that I saw there. So not just a bit of work for that club on the field, but also off the field. So all Spark Northland Club rugby cancelled. But they'll hopefully crack back in very quickly. And Paul, that's why I'm going to start with North Harbour Club Rugby this weekend. Around 5 of North Harbour Club Rugby saw Takapuna 59, North Harbour Marist 10. Silverdale 31, Massey 22. North Shore far too good there for Mahurangi, 49 points to 6. And probably the upset of the round, Kumeu 19, beating the current premiers, East Coast Bays 13, 19-13 there. And that was it looks like it was at East Coast Bays home ground. So what a result for the Westies. Kumeu, and you know, not often you can look at a table and see Kumeu sitting in sixth placing ahead of their big brothers Massey, who are on 10th place. I'll go through that full table. Takapuna looking very, very good. They're the only unbeaten team in North Harbour Club Rugby, sitting on 23 points. Northcote on 21. North Shore on 16, equal with East Coast Bays. And, of course, Silverdale and Kumeu make up the top six. Massey still on 10 and probably out of the running for the 2020 season. Is North Harbour Marist and Mahurangi.
Yeah, both those sides are not going to win yet. So, look, massive ups to them and their coaches for keeping the spirit and still turning up and making games, because yeah, it's tough when you're not winning to keep going. So some they've been on the back of some pretty hefty results, so well done for keeping going there in those two teams.
Paul, just moving right along, I'm actually going to focus on, I had a fella approached me saying, oh, you don't do any Counties Manukau rugby, but they're sort of in the Auckland region. So I thought I'll have a quick look at the Counties Manukau scores for the weekend, which I've pasted up on the New Zealand Sports Radio website, just going through that results. Now, down there, they play for the McNamara Cup, and the weekend gone just saw round six, saw some really tight games with Waiuku getting the better over their near neighbours, Oni Whero, 29-28. We saw Ardmore Marist far too strong for Bombay, 44-21 to the good. And then we saw a very, very a tight game between a couple of rural teams, although people will say, no, Karaka is as close to Papakura, so they're not necessarily rural. So that was a 28-25 win to Karaka over Patamahoe. And I had a man who was there, Robbo. I want to thank you, Robbo, for turning up to the Manurewa Pukekohe game, and the unbeaten team, Manurewa, far too strong for Pukekohe, 41 points to 19 to the good, and that was after leading by 27 points to 7 at halftime. And it was really a case of Pukekohe kept making mistakes and Manurewa kept punishing them. As we look at the Counties Manukau table, course, Papakura, the ninth team with the draw in the weekend, probably not a bad thing for them because they're 5-0 in this. Yeah, they did have a bye, but unfortunately they've also played 5, lost 5, so sitting right down the foot of the table. So that's the club right in the centre there of Papakura. As we look at the table, Manurewa unbeaten this season, sitting on 22 points, looking good. Ardmore Marist right behind them on 20 points, Karaka on 19, Waiuku on 19, make up the top four in the McNamara Cup. As I head to the Auckland results the weekend, and of course Paul and I got out over the weekend, thoroughly enjoyed ourselves, but we'll quickly focus on the games that we weren't at. A great battle between Waitemata and Pakuranga United, very much a seesaw game, and Dwayne Polataiavau will be very, very happy with that result. Pakuranga coming away with the win, 38-34. College Rifles, too good for a very plucky Te Papapa side who couldn't field a side the week before, 66 points to 7. University probably just keeping Papatoetoe at arm's length, 42-25. And Marist having to work hard to beat the Manukau Rovers, 23 points to 8. And unfortunately, the game that we probably should have had somebody there, the unbeaten Ponsonby, came a cropper there at Grammar Tech out at Orake by 47 points to 24. Now, that really, really was a turn-up. The current reigning premier is getting knocked over after looking absolutely unbeatable after the first four rounds. But before I get on to my game, Eden against Suburbs, Paul, you were there, and it was the home side too good for Suburbs, a result that surprised us. Well, not so much the result, but just the magnitude of the result, 40 points to nil.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I think actually was that I was very pleasantly surprised. Look, I was at Manukau the previous weekend, and their pitch was muddy, to say the very least. So I was turning up to this weekend thinking, oh boy, Weave has had record rainfall for the past couple of days. Well, this is going to be an absolute mud bath. But actually, the pitch was really quite good, and was really impressed by that one. By the fact that the pitch was a decent pitch, we got a decent game. Essentially, look, some of us play some real nice rugby and play some actually good rugby, but their line out totally let them down. And that meant that they just got no platform at all in this one. The tries, I'm just reaching for my scribbled notes to remind myself exactly how the tries came about. But yeah, we had kick throughs and tap and goes in the corner and that kind of thing. And suburbs were chasing the game quite early on, so they didn't have anyone at the back to cover for those sort of things, and hence that's why it kind of blew out hence the scoreline was perhaps bigger than the play really warranted. But so yeah, very good win there by Eden last weekend.
A result that sort of surprised many of us, and of course a result that surprised a lot of us was the Grammar Tech Ponsonby game. But I just sort of thought I'd have a quick look at the team sheets. So I see Ponsonby look like they might have been a man or two, but in the main, still put a pretty useful side on the paddock in the front row. Marco Fipuliai, who's played for Auckland, Joseph Royal, who's played provincial rugby, Waimana Graham, Waimana Riedlinger Cup, beg your pardon, in there, Alex Dybex. They've all played for Auckland. Danny Tusitala at halfback, and also out there, Jordan Trainer. But I look at the Grammar Tech team, and we had Andrew McKillio, the Crusaders hooker, who was running around for Grammar Tech on the weekend. That's his club. We also had Issi Tuangafasi. So we had two Crusaders running around for Grammar Tech on the weekend. Jono Hickey at first five, brother of Simon Hickey at first five. So some pretty useful players there. And if I look at the coaching staff, Bruce Bert Whistle and Ant Strawn. So that's a pretty handy coaching combination. So maybe we shouldn't be surprised. Next time I'll definitely be checking some of the team sheets, Paul. But the game that I was at the weekend was the Otahuhu East Tamaki game with Otahuhu, the home side. And it was Otahuhu who took out the victory by 15 points to it was East Tamaki who took out the victory by 15 points to 7 over Otahuhu after it was 7-5 to the home side at halftime. The first half, we just saw the two tries. It looked like it was going to be a tough afternoon for East Tamaki as Tautu Tua, the loose head prop for Otahuhu, picked off an intercept and showed a real clean pair of heels from about 30 out. I actually thought he was a back. He was running that fast, but slowly East Tamaki worked their way back into the game, and it was their winger, Suliasi Mafilio, who finished off a very, very good movement, and I think East Tamaki knew they were back in the game. And in the second half, it was a couple of brilliant tries. One that I've posted on the New Zealand Sports Radio, where the winger for East Tamaki finished off a very good try, and that was the other winger, Siko Pimata, who finished off a very good try. But in between then, there was also another good try scored by Selu Vauiva, the hard-working number seven. But close to my player of the match, the East Tamaki pack, I've got to give them the big ups. They worked extremely hard, and it was that midfield pairing of Magile and Samuele Sickle Samueli, especially a Samoans sevens player who was just absolutely superb. This is a guy who's a very, very solid centre, built like the proverbial tank pool, and he just proved an absolute handful. And I just love the passion, the way that these guys actually played the game. And you know, whilst both of these clubs going through a little bit of a hard time at this point, you know, both the coaches were absolutely fantastic. Willie Bates, who was standing in as the interim coach with the head coach Tamati Hawea away, Willie was fantastic. In fact, the former Otahuhu player himself really, really spoke well. So once again, check on those interviews as well. And also good to catch up with Soatama Tavita, the coach, the well-travelled coach of Otahuhu, who's actually coached Sri Lanka for 2 years. So might be an interesting man who would have a story or two for us, Paul. And, of course, what made my day for me, I ran into Amosi Koloto, the former Tongan number eight, who played for both Manawatu and Wellington, an outstanding player who ended up playing rugby league for Widnes. And gee, what a decent bloke he is, and he's currently the club delegate for East Tamaki. So listen, if you're out there, you're from these two clubs, get out and support them. They play a great brand of code. And right here at New Zealand Sports Radio, we don't just support the top teams, we get out and try and cover all the rugby.
Absolutely, we do. And talking of that, actually, we haven't have we touched on the table yet in for Auckland?
No, we didn't, but we can double back, and that's because we were basically
again. So we should just touch on the table there. So Marist now top the table with since Ponsonby lost that game, and Ponsonby actually have slipped down to fourth, which is a big surprise there. The top four teams the top team Marist have won all five of their games so far, and then Eden and College Rifles and Ponsonby have all just lost one game. Grammar Tech keeping themselves in contention, and then you're kind of getting down to where University, Pakuranga, Waitemata, you think all those sides are going to probably find it tough to climb into that top four, I would think.
I would have to agree with you. I certainly wouldn't discount Ponsonby. Just remembering, they've also played College Rifles, Grammar Tech. They've played University, so they've played a few of these teams around them, and I think they've actually played Pakuranga as well. So they have played a lot of the top sides at this point in time. Paul, I'm not 100% sure about Marist. I think Marist have probably played a lot of the weaker sides, and that's with the greatest of respect. So it'll be interesting to see how things play out. I know Eden are playing Waitemata this weekend. I might just head along to the park and poke my nose in and have a look there, Paul.
Yep, and I think that from memory, Marist are playing. So I can just go back to the, just bring up the draw, can't I? Marist are away to East Tamaki. That should be a probably a comfortable win for them.
Paul, there. you can't say that, Paul. ET are on a roll, mate.
After one win.
That's a roll.
That's on a roll. University against Manukau, that's mid-table, but you'd think University are up there. Ponsonby, against Otahu, are going to have that should be a Ponsonby should be looking. I would expect them to do well there. College Rifles against Papitoto, College Rifles are going to have to be favourites in that one. Suburbs against Grammar, that'll be a decent game. But Grammar Tech, you'd think, would have the upper hand, especially after what they've just done to Ponsonby. Pakuranga against Te Papa. I'm not sure how that one is going to pan out, but probably Pakuranga favourites there.
You'd have to say.
And as you say, Waitemata against Eden, probably the one of the games of the round down the bottom there. Ashwin's getting his dad jokes in. ET phone home for East Tamaki. Yes, well, maybe not. You get used to those kind of jokes if you follow Ashwin on Facebook, I can tell you. So those ones I've not yet decided which game I'll be getting to this weekend. So if one of the clubs is there and is hosting, would like to host me, get in touch. Or if there's a game that you think I should get along to, let me know. And I'll see what I can do. Moving on then to the Farah Palmer Cup, which last week they announced. Oh, sorry. We were hoping to have a report from the Waikato Premiership this week, but some technical difficulties mean the video's not. I've not been able to get hold of the video. But hopefully, from next week onwards, we'll also be having reports from the Waikato Premiership as well.
Just before we pop on, just a couple of things that I've just picked up on the live comments. There's just a mention here of maybe South Africa making some sort of announcement with regards to Super Rugby. Just trying to find the actual pace.
Yeah, Simon says that South Africa will be making an announcement towards the end of this week about the structure of their games. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that one. At the moment, I'm looking at I just put an offer in for a house in Rotorua. So if I do get that, I'm going to have to learn how to say this club's name. That's part of the Bay of Plenty one. Here we go. Faka Awara Wera.
Faka. That's for anybody. I'll interpret that. That's Faka Awara. But anyway,
that's what I said.
Okay.
Faka Awara. So yes, apparently they're one of the strongest clubs in Bay of Plenty. So yes, clearly a name or a location I'm going to have to learn how to say properly if I do get that house in Rotorua. Farah Palmer Cup. Ready? Yep. So let's go. So on the Farah Palmer Cup, so they kick off on the 22nd of August. Which is 3 weeks before as Aaron said, yeah, I thought that's what Paul said. Yeah, see, Aaron, I'm with you there, mate. 3 weeks before the Mitre 10 Cup does kick off, so hopefully we might be able to get along to a couple of those games. I'm not sure how the Auckland Waikato game on the 29th of August is a doubleheader. I'm not sure because the Mitre 10 Cup won't have kicked off at that stage. So I'm not sure how that one works out. So hopefully we'll get to a couple of those games in the opening three weekends. From week four onwards, then the Mitre 10 Cup and the Farah Palmer Cup will be taking place, and some of those games will be double headers. So, for example, on the opening weekend of the Mitre 10 Cup, North Harbour will be hosting a Farah Palmer Cup and Mitre 10 Cup double header, as will Waikato on the Friday, Waikato on the Saturday, and then Northland on the Sunday. So, I think, Stephen, there's a good chance that actually between the two of us, you and Ashwin, we might get to all those double headers in the opening weekend. So, folks, looking forward to covering the Farah Palmer Cup as well as the Mitre 10 Cup coming up. And there looks like there are a host of those doubleheaders, and we'll be looking at, providing coverage from those as well as the Mitre 10 Cup. So do, folks, like the Facebook page, New Zealand Sports Radio. Don't forget, you can also listen to us on the go. So download the podcast, New Zealand Sports Radio, on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Acast. But Stephen, a really interesting new structure to the Farah Palmer Cup with a North Division and a South Division. How do you see that playing out?
Yeah, a little bit of cost cutting involved, methinks.
Yeah.
That's definitely the first point. The second point is you're going to get dollar for value at your games by getting two games, and you get to see all four teams running around live, which is fantastic. I would imagine it'll probably be televised via Sky as well. So I think we've said it how many times? How many times would you like a dollar for this word? It's unprecedented times this year, and no question, it's got a bit to do with it, and I think it's really important that the New Zealand Rugby Union support this Farapama Cup, given what's coming up next year. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
So yeah, so next year, folks, if what Stephen's referring to there is the Women's Rugby World Cup, or what is being called Rugby World Cup 2021, but to be honest with you, I think it should be called the Women's Rugby World Cup, so we don't confuse people. But so the Women's Rugby World Cup kicks off next year here in New Zealand, being hosted in Auckland and Northland. And there's also talk, or there was talk of a new professional women's competition potentially ahead of that, because that's going to be not until sort of July, August time next year for that competition. So there's a big gap between the end of this, which finishes in September, October, October the 18th. So there's a big gap between October the 18th here, all the way through the Rugby World Cup, which will be happening, I say, in July time next year, I think it is. At least 6 to 7 months between them, or maybe even more. So there needs to be some high performance or high level rugby for the Black Ferns and the wider squad to be playing in. So hopefully we'll have something announced for the first half of next year. I know that there was something on the cards to be announced. But obviously, I'm assuming COVID has got in the way of that. Good point by Oshman there, that not only are we going to see the Black Ferns playing, but we're also going to see the Black Ferns Sevens playing. A couple of really interesting and exciting ones. So Portia Woodman, for example, has signed for Northland and will be playing up there. Now, to run you through this, Northland, North Harbour, Auckland, Counties Manukau, Waikato, Bay of Plenty, and Taranaki will be in the North Division. Now, Taranaki have only been around for 2 years. This will be the third season that Taranaki has had a side. This is only the second season that Northland will have had a side. And they're going to be going up against traditional powerhouses like Auckland and Waikato. So a real big test for them. There probably will be a couple of blowouts in that. Particularly Taranaki, I think, are going to struggle to compete against the Waikatos and the Aucklands and the counties. I think they'll provide a much better against the Bay of Plenties and stuff. But yes, really is going to be challenging them. Ashwin also mentions that Tyler Nathan Wong will also be playing for Northland. Also, I had an interview with the Northland head coach. So if you want to have check that out, the long talk interviews on New Zealand Sports Radio, or you can download it as a podcast, obviously. She was the only female head coach until this week. Canterbury announced they have a female head coach. Oh, sorry, Tasman have announced they've got a new head coach who is a female as well. So it's good to see the female coaches getting a chance as well.
I'll have to have a word with Cam Bell and find out how's he managing to attract all these top players up to Northland. Is there a bit of is there a seaside batch being offered up somewhere in the package for our ladies? It's great to see. Paul, something I've just caught the eye on live comments. It's Brandon Smith. Rugby, the skill level has always been there for the Pacific Nations. As a Welsh fan, I know that too well, Rugby World Cup 2007, but they just need some guidance to help them. Now, listen, that is well said, Brendan. I'll probably go one step further. They need some really good administration as well.
They should do. And okay, now look, one of the things, if you listen to some of the, we'll come back to this one. I'm going to come back to Pacific Islands and coaching and playing style in a second. I just want to finish off on the Southern Division. So the Southern Conference will be Manawatu, Hawke's Bay, Wellington, Tasman, Canterbury, and Otago. Southland do not have a side in the Farapama Cup. So six teams in the Southern Division seven teams in the top division. Again, your sides like Hawke's Bay probably going to have a tough time of it against your Canterbury's and your Wellingtons. But look, yeah, it'll be a good challenge for them and good for their growth. So that wraps up the Farrow Palmer Cup. Okay, so yes, if you listen to some of our some of the interviews we had over the weekend and some from the club competitions, Stephen got it particularly comments that came out of the Otahu, the East Tamaki ones. Also, if you wind back to last weekend when I was talking with Manukau as well, one of the things the coaches mentioned there is the one of them is about retention of players is a difficult one, which I think the Pacific Islands also have a problem, struggle with. But you might also hear that, and it also came through on my Eden interview where he was saying, look, I've got a lot of sevens players who like playing unstructured rugby. And I think if you listen to some of the talk from them, they'll talk about the fact that, look, they've got a lot of players who like running and trying to get the structure amongst those players. Can be, they've got all the natural skills. It's about when you try to apply them and try to have a structure so they can actually maximize those abilities, isn't it, Stephen? I think we heard that from a lot of the coaches at club level.
I agree. And listen, my plea is to some of the stronger clubs in Auckland. Listen, you guys have got great systems. You know who you are. Stick to those. you've got strong under 21 sides coming through. You've got the pick of the crop from some of the really good secondary school sides. I know it's a common theme with a lot of the smaller clubs in Auckland. They do produce some really, really good footballers, but those footballers get cherry picked by the bigger clubs, and it's really disappointing. And I think it's something that the Auckland Rugby Union really need to address. The sad thing for me being at the Otahu Rugby Club on the weekend. Now, that was a club that I supported when I first moved to Auckland. They were just around the corner from me, and they used to get really, really good crowds turning up there. You know, Sturgis Park is a natural amphitheater. Is that what you call it?
Yep.
You know, it's fantastic, and the ground was in good nick on the weekend. The problem was, you know, counting all the reserves and basically people who were there, there probably wouldn't have been more than 100 people. They deserve better. They really deserve better. And, you know, my challenge to Auckland Rugby is lift your game.
Yeah, hey, look, it's supposed to be community rugby. It's supposed to be about playing with your mates, with your club. And as long as Iramaya and the other Auckland rep coaches get around all the clubs, then which club you're playing for shouldn't influence you getting promoted. And so hence you should stay. You should be able to just play your entire career with your club. But the other point about this is when you're talking about the Otahu team, for example, a lot of those players are of Samoan descent. And again, they need that structure, that guidance, because again, they got the skills, but they like playing unstructured rugby. And we've seen, and I guess that was what I was trying to compare with the Pacific sides. We're seeing that with a lot of these, especially the more island, with what was a larger island culture within their clubs, which I think is clubs like Otahu, East Tamaki as well.
And there are some good young players running around, and it correlates with a good comment that Batman has just said about the All Blacks under 20 squad being a little bit of a joke in the last few seasons. Well, part of my issue with the way that's selected, once again, it's some of the kids that come out of secondary schools are almost preordained to make that side, but there are some really good kids running around and some sizable kids at that running around in club rugby. I know both the sides I watched on the weekend, two very, very young sides. I think, Paul, we might wrap it up, or the show will go just as long as the Aotearoa Super Rugby show did last night.
So thank you, everybody. I just wanted to touch on that one about the about the sort of the guidance and structure that the Pacific Island teams quite often do need. So we see that in club rugby as well. Thank you everyone for joining us in the chat. It's just been two of us tonight. It's been very difficult to manage the chat as well. So sorry if we have missed your comments, but we do love you joining us live. We've got this show obviously covering getting your rugby fix on a Monday night. You can get your league fix on a Thursday night and your cricket fix on a, your league fix on a Wednesday night and your cricket fix on a Thursday night, both at 8 p.m. as well. So do join in those live shows as well. Don't forget, as I said before, that you can listen to us on the go. So do download the podcast on Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, or Acast. Just search for New Zealand Sports Radio. And as I say, let your friends know about this, please. Word of mouth is what is going to really, really grow the channel and make us viable so that we can keep this going on. We are I would say we're probably the only podcast come show that is producing daily content for you folks. You're getting at least two shows nearly two shows a day, sometimes three. So please do spread the word, help us grow the audience, because we are loving doing this, but we do need your support to make it successful as well. Thank you very much, Stephen, for your time, and good night, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.